Business Breakfast with Owanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
Greg Earlham joins us. Very good morning to you, Craig. So the World Health Organization is wondering whether or not to call this a global emergency. And what started off as fairly small, you can see now, can't you, with the Lunar New Year looming, 100 million people travelling around, etc., etc. This could be very serious indeed. And we should cast our minds back to that SARS outbreak, which did have an impact on the global economy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the timing of this is what makes this so concerning, is the number of people who are going to be travelling around the country in confined quarters. And obviously, the announcement earlier this week that this could be being passed from person to person, which it wasn't previously believed to be doing. All of a sudden, you're talking about the potential for a rapid outbreak, which is why they are seeking to contain it. Obviously, so far, the casualties are still very low. And I think it's worth bearing that in mind before we kind of panic, which is what can sometimes happen in the early stages of these things. But it does just almost a reminder back to issues of the past, as you've rightly alluded to, which is probably why people are approaching this with a lot of concern.
And China can no longer consider itself, and we shouldn't consider it, a closed kingdom at all, because the world is a much more interconnected place even than it was during the SARS outbreak.
Exactly, which is why we've already had cases reported in a few other countries, including one in the US. So this does become a global issue very quickly, because the way people are moving around these days, including in a country like China.
Right, so let's move to Davos and the UK and the United States and the European Union and trade. The UK has vowed, we touched on this yesterday, the tech tax will go ahead, and the US says that it will respond by perhaps taxing UK car companies putting tariffs on UK car imports. And also the Chancellor added to it by saying that actually, as far as negotiations are concerned, the EU is still the preference to get solved first before the United States. Now, somebody's clumping around in very heavy boots, aren't they?
Yeah, so I mean, This is still one of these kind of extraordinary issues where I think everyone's in agreement that tech companies don't pay enough tax, and that it needs to be proportionate to the sales which are occurring in the countries. But when you're looking for a multilateral agreement, then naturally there's always going to be pushback from the countries where they do pay the bulk of their tax. There's going to be pushback from the countries of origin, like the US, where many of these tech companies do originate from, and therefore many jobs are created, who are going to push back about the kind of levies that other countries are going to be pushing forward. So while everyone may have the same or a similar idea in mind, coming to an actual an agreement on this was always going to take years. Otherwise, I mean, let's face it, we'd have a multinational tax code, which we don't, because that would make things obviously a lot easier, but everyone has the different ideas as to what the levy should be.
Are you suggesting that this is the normal discourse for trade talks that actually used to take place behind closed doors, and it's only now that they're so important and everybody's talking about them that we're hearing actually what goes on?
Yeah, exactly, and I think this is also a kind of, we're in a new era of what these tax talks involve, because we are talking about these multinational online companies, and it's a lot more difficult to therefore monitor exactly how much tax they should be paying in what countries. It's obviously previously been a lot more simple, and things like VAT could solve a lot of issues, for example. So I do think that this is a far more complex issue than what we've dealt with in the past. It's also been an extremely slow response to the emergence of these companies, but again, it only takes a few countries to push back, and a few big countries like the US to push back against rules which others want to be imposed. And you've got a massive issue. But let's face it, we've got to remember that if this was the UK, I don't think there'd be any less pushback. Just look at what kind of pushback there was in the UK, for example, to a financial transactions tax from the EU, because it disproportionately affected us. We are not innocent in all of this. So there was always going to be pushback from the US, and it makes you very sceptical as to how you come to an actual agreement on this, a multilateral one, which is why countries are going down the unilateral route. But the US is always going to respond with tariffs. We saw it against France. They've come to an agreement to push that back. To expect that we're going to get any special treatment because we're the UK seems a little bit naive. And let's face it, car manufacturers, that's the last thing they need right now, is tariffs coming from the US as well.
Now, railways are complicated things, aren't they? And our local line, which has a huge sort of catchment area into London, South Western Railways, could be nationalised, declared £137 million loss. 21-day strike before Christmas, and also rolling stock late and so on. I mean, if if that particular network were to be nationalised, that would shift the power considerably, wouldn't it, towards nationalising other lines? Because it seems as though even the mighty transport companies cannot make money.
Yeah, I mean, I think this does highlight both of these issues, really do just highlight the fact that we do need a fundamental rethink as to what our strategy is and what it is that we want to achieve in all of this. Now, don't get me wrong, this idea that we need to go back to the drawing board is one that infuriates me personally, because it feels like we spend all our time at the drawing board just rubbing things out, correcting things, touching things up, and not actually doing anything that fundamentally changes the way that these systems work. And we are talking about a system which is lost in time. We are well behind the other major economies around the world, not just Japan. Japan's always the one that's highlighted because they do have this ultra high speed rail, incredible connectivity, etc. But there's many other countries around the world where our public services, like the rails, are falling behind. And the fact that we are seeing many of these now falling into national ownership does just highlight the fact that this is fundamentally broken. And we can talk and talk and talk and talk for days as much as we want, but things need to be implemented so we can try and actually fix the issues. And for me, something like HS2, just going back to drum, but I understand obviously costs have to be adhered to and we need to try and keep them down. But if we go through years and years or decades of discussions and finally decide, you know, we spent close to £10 billion and we've decided it doesn't actually work, we need to try and find a different solution, this just feels like a complete failure from all concerned, because our infrastructure is lagging. And just going back to the drawing board and trying to come up with new solutions and try and touch up old models just doesn't seem to be a logical solution as far as I'm concerned.
Boeing, the 737 MAX, has the full confidence of Boeing's CEO. Well, you would expect him to say that, wouldn't you?
Just not the regulators.
Well, indeed, yes. But its actual re-emergence is getting later and later. Let's just address the supply chain. Never mind Boeing for the moment. But the supply chain must be really feeling the pain now, mustn't it?
Yeah, they will be, especially considering that the 737 MAX production is now effectively paused, because there's only so much space that they can put this inventory, right? I mean, we're not talking about boxes of small items. We're talking about enormous aircraft that there has to be stored while the production was continuing, because obviously they couldn't be delivered. This is a very worrying situation now, particularly for Boeing. Now, their share price has fallen around 30% at a time when global stock markets are up, I think, around the same amount over the course of that time. So when we look at the share price of Boeing, you can say, well, actually, they've not fared too badly when you consider the seriousness of this affair. But when you compare their performance to the overall stock market, then they've actually underperformed dramatically. But the question is, when we're talking about the aircraft being back in the skies in July, that's actually a more worrying sign for me, because in September we were talking about kind of December, when we were looking a little bit earlier, we were talking about October, November time. We were always talking 2 or 3 months ahead. The fact that they've effectively acknowledged that this is going to be another 6 months at least is a very concerning sign, because you have to wonder just how incredibly fundamental the problems were to begin with. So this is a major concern for Boeing, as far as I'm concerned.
And we can close our interesting morning's chat with a subject which is very dear to your heart, which is the European Central Bank. I mentioned, I know, they're meeting today, but in Davos, a lot of bankers, surprise, surprise, have been at any European officials there saying, hang on a second, we don't like these negative interest rates. We can't make any profits. What will the response of the ECB be? I think I know what it's going to be. Not quite the two-fingered salute, but it'll be something like that, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember that the ECB has done everything it can to try and stimulate the economy and hit its 2% inflation target. And yet, what we're effectively seeing is lagging growth, lagging inflation, and fundamental problems which still exist. Now, we've seen the Draghi's final bazooka a few months ago, so we're not expecting any policy change from the ECB at any of the upcoming meetings. But one of the issues which is expected to be discussed going forward is going to be whether a close but close to 2% inflation target is an apt mandate for the ECB, and this is something they're expected to discuss. The problem that almost exists with that is, let's assume that they decide that it's not aggressive enough and they need more. That doesn't help the policy tools, which they still don't have. So you're kind of addressing the wrong issue here. And accepting lower inflation is probably equally as problematic. So, I mean, this just comes back to the same old arguments of the ECB is doing everything it can, like every other central bank around the world, to try and stave off deflation, to try and stimulate growth. But ultimately, it feels like governments need to start doing more. And this, I sound like a broken record when I'm saying this, and just throwing cash at the problem doesn't necessarily make it go away. But it does feel like there's too many countries around the world where there's been leaning so much on the central banks over the course of the last 10 years, they haven't done enough to actually fix the problems which enable us to be in a stronger position now.
And we did, very, very briefly, we did start the programme talking about the virus outbreak in China. The latest from that is that the city is now actually in lockdown. Transport links have been actually severed and there are worries about food shortages. I just mentioned this because I know you'll be looking at it during the day. We may be talking in much more depth about it next week. But that's the absolute latest. Craig Earlham, thank you very much indeed.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.